is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Justin.
I'm Pete.
And we are coming to you live from a couple places on the internet. We're live on Facebook, YouTube, LinkedIn, Twitch, Kick, of course, Instagram. Maybe you're listening later wherever you get your podcasts. And if that is true, if you want ad-free versions of this podcast and all the podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub. We also got a very active Discord, among other things you can check out. It's a lot of fun. It's a good time. You guys are having a good time, right? You're having a good time on there? Everybody's having a good time?
Oh, sure, yes.
Great. Well, you guys are going to be having a good time out in the audience because we have an amazing guest for you this evening. He is an incredibly prolific comic book writer. That's certainly how we know his stuff first, but he has been embarking on an amazing new project called The End Times, which started as a newspaper of sorts. We'll get into more of what that means in a second. And is now going to be collected and published with expanded material as a novel that he's doing in collaboration with some guy named Stephen King that I've never heard of before, but sounds like an up-and-coming writer. So I hope to see more of his stuff. Ladies and gentlemen, Ben Percy. Ben, welcome to the show.
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Very excited to have you here. Excited to talk about this project. So this is something that we actually were talking about at our Discord a couple of months back when you first announced it. But this is a newspaper that comes, maybe this is a bad way of describing it, but it comes from like an alternate reality where there's been an apocalypse and it's chronicling that through articles and other things. It's all fictional, but you slowly follow these characters who are reporting on this apocalypse through the format of the newspaper. And now, as I mentioned, in 2027, it is going to be collected. They're promising that there's going to be expanded material from Volume 1 that's coming from Bad Hand Books. Yeah. But let's take it back. I'm sure you've talked about this a lot, but we know you as a comic book writer, so seeing you move to the printed page, the old gray lady, perhaps, was a bit of a surprise. Why?
Bold time to move to news.
Yes. I mean, what led to this? What was the first germ of the idea that led to the End Times?
Yeah, who says journalism is dead? I started off as a prose writer, writing short stories, writing essays, writing novels, and only later made the leap to comics in 2014. This is somewhere in between. You know, it's serialized storytelling. This is showing up monthly in your inbox or at your house if you order the print edition. Like you said, it's a short novel. That, over the course of 12 months, you know, adds up into the story of a community. A community that is, you know, facing horrors, but also being reborn. You said it's a post-apocalyptic newspaper. That's accurate in that it's 13 years after everything fall apart. So people are rebuilding and finding their way again, including the editor of this paper, who, you know, her name's Mary Poole, and everybody else is like, oh, I'm a farmer now. I'm a scavenger. I'm a hunter. I'm a whatever, right? Blacksmith. She hasn't really found her way, but one day when she's digging through these old newspaper offices, she finds an ancient printing press and decides that, like, this is how I can contribute. So it starts off as just her voice. And then she starts to invite others in. And by the end, you know, it's kind of a chorus of voices. And I describe it as a cross between Our Town and Station 11 in that way.
Oh, that's awesome. Which skill should we pursue? Blacksmithing? I mean, I'm assuming this is coming to us.
Yeah, there's actually a character named Paul Weitz in the paper, who is in charge of the ham radio. And he's up there and he's listening. He's trying to figure out what else is going on. You know, it's static out there, but occasionally there's another voice, right? So the perfect pivot for a podcaster.
All right.
Nice. All right.
Get up in that gabled tower with the ham radio.
Nice. I'm really curious how you begin to approach putting together a project like this, though, because, I mean, you know this, I'm just saying this for the audience, but there's a difference between writing a prose novel and doing a newspaper that has multiple things going on at the same time. You can kind of read it in any order you want in a certain way. So how do you control the narrative through that?
Well, that was actually one of the delights of it, is that I know that some people are going to go, you know, in a very rigid way from top left to bottom right and work through the pages. And I know that others are going to be like, I'm going to the comics first. Yeah. You know, because on the last page, there's comics and other people will flit around. Some people like the sports section, you know, that's the only reason they read the newspaper. We have no sports section. I'm sorry. But you know, the way in which you take in this collage is up to you. And it's growing, right? As I mentioned, not just the voices, but the coverage. And her decisions early on, like the first edition is sort of more monosyllabic in that she's just kind of ranting. She's like, maybe nobody's going to read this, but maybe it's just for me. Maybe I'm talking to myself. But then she's like, okay, there's going to be, you know, in the next issue, like this weird thing's happening. Like this farmhouse that the people disappeared outside of town. So just, you know, heads up on that. And over here, we're going to have a, like, this guy's holding a strings concert. And these people need help harvesting. And then it starts to become more necessary. More people subscribe. More people are, you know, picking up the paper. They're producing more because, you know, it's a chronicle of a community, but it's also a way, and this is what I really believe about small town news, as opposed to national news. I think national divides international news people. You know, it's polarizing intentionally and triggering intentionally. A small town newspaper is a beautiful thing in that it is meant to bring a community together and make them stronger. So that is the intent of this paper.
Power Dribble. Is there a specific paper you were inspired by, like a hometown paper you looked at for a model for the end times at all?
Yeah, you know, I admit to not having a strong interest in local news until COVID. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, I was very interested in what was going on around me. And sort of poisoned by, you know, global news and feeling helpless like everybody else. And poisoned by what I was putting in my eyes every time I clicked open a website or social media or grabbed a magazine or newspaper, like a small town newspaper by comparison, like the Northfield News, which I live in Northfield, Minnesota. There's a lot of this town is a cracked mirror version of this town. Northfield becomes North End, the end times. and some of the people in the town, I've just changed their name slightly. You know, there are people who live here. And the map of the town, we have a map, you know, it's just like a few tweaked a few things. So anyways, like, you know, you see in a small town newspaper that this organist who works for the church for 50 years is retiring, or that a new restaurant is opening downtown, or that this quarterback at the high school got carried off the field at homecoming, or there's an announcement for a fundraiser for a family that's, you know, going through a hard time, and it's just, I don't know, during the pandemic, when we were on lockdown, it's just like, all of a sudden I recognized that I can't make a difference on this larger scale, but I can make a difference in my own backyard. And I found that to this day, I find it very meaningful to engage with local news.
Awesome. Go ahead, Justin.
What was it like, the partnership like with Stephen King? How did that come about, and what was the actual process like?
Yeah, so while I was building this thing up, you know, I was thinking about King because, well, it's basically the world of The Stand that I'm writing in. So I really do just kind of, The Stand was a really important book to me growing up. And and that world is essentially where I set this. Think of it as like an ancillary story. And so I reached out to him because of that, but also because I read The Green Mile. You know, some people might not know this, but when The Green Mile came out, it was a serialized novel. It was Dickensian. And I can't remember if it was every month or if it was every 2 weeks, but I would be at like the crappy Walden Books in my crappy mall. I was there when it opened to buy that little edition. And it was a really formative reading experience for me. So I was thinking about those two things, among a few other things, including how he, you know, The Carrie is essentially an epistolary novel, and he's taken some big experimental swings with some of the first ebooks that ever came out or books available through his website originally. You know, he's kind of a maverick in that regard. So I figured, you know, it wouldn't hurt to just say, do you have any interest in, you know, doing something? And the worst he could say was no, but he has 5 million people bugging him a day. I didn't want to be, I don't want to be bugging Stephen King. I do have I would say we are not BFFs to any degree, but he was very kind enough. One of his first tweets when he first got on Twitter, I'm going to keep calling it Twitter, was about my novel Red Moon, which was so generous of him. He's really supportive of younger writers.
That's so cool.
He you know, blurbed a few other books of mine later on. I interviewed him on stage at a book festival in Minneapolis. Oh, wow. So it was really special for me to be able to meet my, he's literally my hero, you know?
Yeah.
I'm not overstating that. And so when he said yes, you know, he asked me a few more questions and then he said yes. And I don't want to overstate his involvement. It's not like we're co-authoring this, right, but he is very generously like giving me a bunch of ideas and giving me a bunch of awesome passages that have totally changed the course of the story, you know? Yeah. Including offering up his pseudonym as Claudia Inez Bachman. Claudia Inez Bachman being the wife of, you know, his pseudonym, Richard Bachman.
Yeah.
Cool.
But Richard died of cancer of the pseudonym, but Claudia lives.
That's amazing. Awesome. So is he, by the way, I just want to say everything that you're saying really resonates with me because I'm in the middle of going back to the beginning and rereading through King's books now, and I'm just waiting for the Stand to come through in the library. Also, I looked at my shelf the other day and I was like, oh, right, The Green Mile came out as those tiny little books. And yeah, same thing. I was there as soon as they came out. But when his stuff comes in, I'm curious about like how it changed the narrative. Was it merely... Was it that it was Stephen King? Was it that it was having a second voice in the book? What was the important part there?
Well, just to give you an example, he sends me this passage from Claudia that's all about Trape Village. Trape looks a little bit like Trap, so it has, you know, great implication already. This story mainly takes place in North End, right? But he invented this village that's a little bit outside of it, a satellite village. And bad shit is going on there. So it ended up being the perfect thing to create, like, the shark is circling and getting closer, right? It all begins in Trape Village or beyond that, right? Because around this time that strange stuff starts happening, Claudia also shows up in town, you know? And there are things like he has a minister hanging in this barn, from the rafters of this barn, slash church, and he's got a note on him, and he's got, you know, there's buttons sewn to him, and then he started to invent this scarecrow stuff and these dead rats, and it just became like immediately, because he's king, right, the horror just like really elevated.
You're like, I'm trying to make a newspaper here. Okay, this is what
this is journalism. Keep your rats down at home.
The news is scary enough, right?
Exactly. We don't need buttons.
Yeah. I did want to mention before I forget that every week on the show, we have a professional chef down in New Orleans. He will be named Brett Macris. He works at an amazing restaurant called Shift. 100%. Please check it out if you're ever in New Orleans way. He creates a cocktail based on our guest or the thing they're working on. And this week, he created the Ink and Ember, which is a cocktail in honor of your book, The End Times. Cool. It's rye whiskey, mezcal, Amaro honey syrup, Exeter bitters, Paychild's bitters, an orange peel, and as he puts it, a few of these, and you'll forget what the word apocalypse even means. So there you go.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
You know, and this is, I mean, that really makes me happy. And one of the reasons I love it, too, is like, that is a drink I want.
That,
you know, I love mezcal. I love whiskey. So, yes, that's my new family label.
All right.
Excellent. So we'll check that out. Let's, if you don't mind, let's talk about some of the other stuff that you've been working on, because you have a lot of stuff going on at Marvel as well. And then we can loop back to The End Times to give it a little plug-a-roo at the end there. The big thing that came out, the big news that happened last week, I think Time doesn't have any meeting anymore, but Marvel announced Midnight, the new horror line that is going to be separate. It's a new publishing line, and the three books that they announced are Midnight Spider-Man, Midnight X-Men, and the one that you're doing, which is Midnight Fantastic Four with Kev Walker, which is awesome. Love his horror stuff. I know it's early days there, but what can you tell us about Midnight Fantastic Four, if anything?
I got to be careful because, you know, I haven't done any press on this, and I'm not
we
sure.
We don't want to get you in trouble. Well,
not... You know, I don't want the Mickey Mouse to crash through the window here with a machete and pop my head off if I break an NDA.
Hell of a way to go, though.
Great way to go out. And what's more horrifying than challenging an NDA to a major corporation? The true.
I mean, I will say that this is, you know, its own continuity. Mm-hmm. This is tonally maybe very different than what people are expecting. You know, this isn't. This is an A24 joint right here. Like, oh, this is elevated horror. It's really, really, really cool. I'm not just talking about my own stuff. I'm talking about what Hickman's doing. I'm talking about what Philip is doing. Like, it's super. I would be buying the. I would be pulling these books because it's exactly my wheelhouse. And
it's interesting. Fantastic Four feels like maybe not the like top pick for a horror book.
Well, here's the thing. You look at these titles. Probably when people, I've heard horror, they're going to do a Man Thing book or Morbius book or whatever, right? No, we're taking titles that are not what you expect.
Yeah.
You know, and giving it, seeing them through a dark lens. So to me, they would have never let me write Fantastic Four, right? They would have never let me write Spider-Man. The only way I could write Spider-Man was having my own continuity when I wrote Predator versus Spider-Man.
Right.
No, because then I could just go insane.
That was awesome, by the way.
Because I'm the mouth breather who writes the Harry psychopaths at Marvel. And so they would have never let me write the first family. But in this case, right, this is Lovecraftian horror. Yeah. And this is cosmic horror. Terrible things are happening. And so it is exactly my thing.
Oh, man, I'm so scared now.
Yeah, I mean, from the description, and you touched on this a little bit, so it sounds like, I mean, it doesn't specify that it's Reed Richards, but it sounds like it is going into like the Lovecraftian, a little bit piercing dimension. So I imagine we're going to get a little bit of a renewed origin of Fantastic Four.
Clean origin. Yeah.
So, I mean, but like the side thing here, everybody is kind of curious about the different continuity thing. Broad strokes, what are we talking here? Is it like separate titles that may intervene later down the line? Will intervene later down the line? Will cross over?
Yeah. This is slow and patient. You know, if you think about what Hickman was doing with X-Men and the, you know, Dawn of Krakoa, like there's a runway here.
Okay. That's very exciting.
Nobody's in a rush.
Yeah. I mean, on the same note, this is also very cart before the horse, but because you have three different, very different titles, you have the body horror stuff going on in Spider-Man, you've got the vampire supernatural stuff going on in X-Men, you've got the cosmic horror, like you said. I mean, we haven't talked as much to you. We've certainly spent a lot of time talking to Philip Kennedy Johnson, and we know that he thinks like big picture, world building, lore, etc. So even though these feel like very disparate ideas, I imagine there's a bigger...
Yeah, we're meeting every 2 weeks. Okay. We're all reading each other's scripts.
Oh,
you know, this is not something that's happening on a siloed basis. Like we have multiple editors beyond just Jordan and Caden who are editing the books. We have multiple editors, you know, giving feedback, and it's just like the whole Marvel machine's behind it. It's really fun.
Is it fun for you to read other scripts just to be like, oh my God, this gives me ideas or gives you energy just to kind of see the way other people write?
Yeah, I think it's vice versa. Like we're getting ideas from each other to put into our books. And also when we're talking about what happens in 12 months or what happens in 24 months.
I do want to bring up, we have a super chat here from YouTube. This is from Common Sense 5199. Mr. Percy, love your run on Ghost Rider. What inspired creating Exhaust and Talia? Question about Final Vengeance. Why Zarathos possesses other B4 Hood?
Three questions.
Yes.
thanks for digging Ghost Rider. That was one of my favorite comics runs.
Nice.
A lot of villains in stories are dark mirrors of the character, right? You know, you think of Moriarty. Moriarty is like a dark mirror of Sherlock Holmes, who has the same skill set, but uses it for evil purposes. The same thing for like Belloc. Belloc in Raiders of the Lost Ark is Indiana Jones. So you take those core elements and then you twist them, magnify them, warp them in different ways. Exhaust is, you know, sort of like an externalization of the scars that Johnny carries inside him, you know, and he's this walking horror who, you know, leaves this wake of sort of trauma behind him. Talia, you know, I felt like Roxanne had been done and done and done and done, and I just wanted something new. I thought Johnny deserved a goth girlfriend.
Nice.
She's actually one of my favorite characters that I've co-created at Marvel. Awesome. I really love that character. And, you know, the sort of jagged pieces of Johnny and the jagged pieces of Talia just sort of fit together and give you a sense of wholeness. As for the Hood, like, one of my favorite comic stories is The Long Halloween, which is the Godfather set in Gotham. I mean, from the very first line, you know this. The first line is, "I believe in Gotham," which is an absolute hat tip to "I believe in America." You know, right. And I wanted. So what I was thinking about is like, oh, I want to do something like that. I want to do like a crime horror story, and my other favorite, you know, gangster movie besides The Godfather is Goodfellas. And so I was like, I want to do horror Goodfellas. And so that's why I chose The Hood, because he's the equivalent of the Ray Liotta character who, you know, he always wanted to be a gangster. You know, he's this low level dude who wants to be big time, but he's his own worst enemy.
I am curious, just because we have a couple of people who are saying, wow, they're way more excited to hear about Midnight after hearing you talk about it. What's it like internally? Because you're working on a lot of different projects at this point. So how are you splitting your focus between the Midnight universe, between you're doing Deadpool right now, you're doing Punisher, you're doing all of these plus End Times that we're talking about?
No, End Times is mostly done. It's true of a lot of things that people see is like, oh, how are you doing all these things at once? Well, I wrote that 7 months ago, you know?
Yeah.
Or this, I wrote a year ago, or. And with comics even, you're sometimes like 6-7 months ahead of schedule. Mm-hmm. So, you know, but the question in sincerity is about shifting focus, having sort of like a cascading focus. And, you know, you really just need to like devote, this week is Fantastic Four week. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, these 3 days I'm only working on Midnight, or I don't know, whatever it is you need to do. Like, you just immerse yourself and you get in that zone of deep focus so that you can produce something.
I mean, obviously we're talking a lot about horror. Are you consuming horror when you're not working? And if so, like, what are you watching? What are you reading? What are you seeing?
Horror. Yeah. I'm a horror head. I mean, that's my favorite genre. You know, I always feel kind of jealous of people who have like incredible passions and knowledge about things. You know, like, I've got a, you know, brother-in-law who's obsessed with farming and he knows every damn thing about farming. And I've got a cousin-in-law.
Keep him close for the End Times. Keep him close for the End Times.
Right? Yeah. Somebody else who just knows everything about baseball. You know, stats. It's an encyclopedia inside him. And even at Marvel, or at DC working there, there's some people, like, you run into Tom Brevoort. That guy knows everything. He knows everything. He's Wikipedia for comics. He knows everything. You know, you can be like, Tom, what issue did this line of dialogue happen into? He's like, well, 1969.
That's a good Tom Brevoort.
So for me, that thing, though, I came to recognize that's horror movies for me. Like, that is my thing above all else. You know, I've always subscribed to Fangoria magazine. One of my earliest inspirations was EC Comics. You know, I have seen An American Werewolf in London upward of 30 times. it's the thing I'm going to turn to constantly for comfort. I know that sounds weird to some people, and just escapism. So, you know, Stephen King is my hero for a reason.
We got another question here from the comments. This is, have you ever been approached or been asked to do voice work? I feel like you could voice Apocalypse with no problems.
Have your people talk to my people. I recorded one of my audiobooks, Red Moon. It's a horror, not werewolf novel. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So if you want your ears to bleed, download it.
Got that bass.
Yeah.
Just to get back to the comic book work for a second. So you have a run on Punisher. There's a new issue coming out tomorrow. But one of the big things we've been talking about, we were talking about this on our Punisher One Last Kill podcast a little bit, is all the different takes on the Punisher. Like, what is, I can feel Pete bristling a little bit because he's definitely our Punisher guy here. But like, what is, What do you think the core of the Punisher is? Like, what is the most important key ingredient of the character?
Well, and just to elaborate on that, like, we were talking about the difference between the sort of, like, war-scarred PTSD, he was always this man guy, and then the very meticulous, like, war journal Punisher who's just, like, he's got his punch list and he's moving down it and going through, and he's much more in control. It feels like those are two different people, but they're often put together as the Punisher.
I'm influenced by both of those characters, you know, both of those iterations. I love Garth Ennis as much as I love Potts, you know, and so I'd say it's like so many other things with Wolverine as well. The influences are blended, and then you put your own special sauce on top of it. So those versions of the Punisher exist in my mind, but I've done something that it gives me a little bit of freedom in that, you know, I broke his brain.
He smashed him with a hammer.
So in a way, I'm able to not ignore continuity at all, because all that continuity exists to me, but instead give him a new beginning that still feels, you know, still feels like he's connected to those other Franks, right? While also having a new foundation. So cool. I'm sort of treating him right now, you know, there's that glimmer of a conscience in him. But he's also kind of like a force of nature. He's kind of like a natural disaster.
Oh, yeah.
This is not to put you on the spot too much, but this is definitely top of mind with Jerry Conway sadly passing away recently. He was very outspoken about the misappropriation of the Punisher symbol. And I was curious to get your take on it, because Marvel definitely moved away for a while to the point that Frank just sort of disappeared, went to Weird World entirely. But you're the guy who's bringing him back, putting back in the world. It's a more classic take on the Punisher. So what's your take on that? How does the Punisher of the Marvel Universe gel with the way the real world sees him?
My comment on that is that, you know, there is a skull in his chest that belongs to Frank alone, you know, and it captures the pain that has been inflicted upon him and the pain he inflicts on the world. So it ends there. It doesn't belong to anybody else but him.
Hmm. Nice.
Good answer. We got another very specific super chat here that I wanted to bring up. This is again from Common Sense, who has a lot of questions about the Ghost Rider comic, I believe. In Final Vengeance, Mephisto casts Zarathos out of Johnny and Zarathos and others like Danger and the Brood before the Hood. Can Hood use power control them? Do you know what this means?
I mean, I think that just to speak to the Hood, I think he's a really reckless character. And his control over the Spirit of Vengeance, you know, is pretty feeble compared to, you know, what others are capable of when channeling him. He was supposed to, you know, the Spirit isn't supposed to be permanently hosted in the Hood. That was just supposed to be a fun little spinoff there. And I'm not sure what's happening with the Hood right now. I think he's out there still making trouble. I ripped off his face, you know, to complete the complete.
Love that. I love that.
So even if he doesn't have the Spirit in him, he still has this grotesque sort of, like, you know, skullish appearance that, you know, the Spirit left its mark.
Yeah. Nice. Okay, this is the last one, Common Sense. I'll just bring this up because this guy keeps throwing us money, which is very nice. I really enjoy your Hellverine. Congratulations, it expands into an ongoing series. Have read Dokken Dark Wolverine back in the 2000s.
Thanks. Yeah, I mean, Hellverine is one of those situations where I couldn't believe it hadn't been done.
Yeah.
You know, I was writing Punisher. Sorry, I'm talking about another crossover I'm about to write. So I got I'm writing Wolverine and I'm writing Ghost Rider. How would I not put the two together? you're required when you're writing two mainline series that fit so neatly, you got to put them together. Like peanut butter and jelly, they're better together. And then there's this, you know, opportunity to have flaming claws and a flaming skull head on Wolverine. Like, hell yeah, I'm leaning into that. And I thought it was just going to be like a one-off, though. Like, I wrote this story called Weapons of Vengeance, and I was paired with Jeff Shaw on it. Jeff Shaw, you know, is now a Stormbreaker Marvel. I'm working with him on Deadpool. Awesome, gritty style. He's the perfect person to pair with on the storyline. But I thought that would be it. It's like a seven-ish serial killer story with some supernatural elements. But people got really into this Hellverine thing.
I think people took one look at it and were like, oh, hell yes. what is happening here?
The Stegman cover. That's going for, that's a rare bird now. Like, that's going for $250 online. Like,
dang.
I don't think anybody knew how popular it was going to be. And there's a, they made a toy, you know, which I have on my shelf over there. It's really, every day I'm like, that's cool. It's a toy.
still catching your eye.
Anyways, they wanted me to keep going, but I couldn't just have, I couldn't have Wolverine, you know, carry on the Spirit of Vengeance forever. So I wanted to do something with Dokken for a long time because I felt like Dokken was always in the shadow of his father. And I wanted to give him a glow up. What better way to give somebody a glow up than to light him on fire? so I had to kill him in Sabretooth War to bring him back, you know, with the spirit of this demonic spirit parasite inhabiting him. So I gave him a new cool power set. I gave him sort of like his own journey. And then I was like, all right, did my job. And then I moved on to do some other. I was really, really happy to write those issues, though.
I love the use of Dokken there. I feel like I like the Dokken character a lot, this sort of like, a little bit of a bad guy at points, but seems to have a character philosophy at all times, which is rare in characters that are at his, sort of his level. Yeah. So I thought it was a great. I hope that Helverine keeps lingering on. In
the I hope he's still run around making trouble.
Exactly.
While we're taking a moment kind of talking about a little bit of your greatest hits, it does bring up a great point. You've done a lot of cool, amazing things in comics, so thank you.
Hey, thank you. I wouldn't be able to do that if people weren't reading them and if retailers weren't carrying them. So every day I sit down, I can get stressed out, but I always feel really lucky to be doing what I'm doing.
And you just signed another 2-year exclusive with Marvel. Is that correct?
Yeah.
Awesome.
Which is awesome. I can't believe they keep me letting me, you know, play with these toys.
I mean, speaking of which, you mentioned when you're writing two big titles, you got to jam them together. You're writing Deadpool and Punisher right now. Or
yeah, I might crossover. Have said too much earlier.
let's hope so. That'll be amazing.
Announcement.
All right. Looking forward to Dead Punishers or whatever it's called. to loop back to the End Times, so that's not coming out collected until 2027, but they have said that there's more material that's going to be in it. Is that going to be more story material, development material, TBD?
More art, you know, maybe an essay I write, a few more passages. Like, you know, the paper itself, right? We're going to maintain that format. So when you buy this hardback, which you can get from, right, you can pre-order right now at the Bad Hand Books website, you know, it'll look just like the paper that's been arriving in mailboxes. Now, each of those papers is, you know, it only looks like a few pages, 4 or 5 pages, but it's actually 15 to 20 pages in Microsoft Word.
Oh, wow.
So if you think about 12 issues, each of them between 15 and 20 pages, that adds up to a novel size story, even if it's contained within the magazine format and a little bit shrunken in that regard. So, yeah, it's going to be like a cool, I think it'll be just a cool thing to flip through and explore different parts of it. And, you know, it's not going to look like any other book.
And what is it going to be like for you as a longtime fan when you get to see that printed book that says by Benjamin Percy with Stephen King on the cover?
Well, you know, I don't want to overstate Stephen King's involvement. You know, I talked to him about it and he's like, can you say contributions by Stephen King? So
Stephen your King names is, will still be there. You can scratch out the other part with a Sharpie if you want.
I'm so grateful. I know Doug Marano is the publisher of Bad Hand Books too. Is giant Stephen King nerd like me. So we're both really delighted that, you know, he's allowed us to sort of shoulder up by putting Claudia in this. He allowed us to shoulder up to the Kingverse.
Wow. Yeah. That's cool. Really cool.
This is obviously a lot of stuff. You have a lot of stuff coming out. I know, just to plug one more thing you have a novella called Hotline that just came out, if that's correct. Where can people check that out? Because I think that
Right now you can check it out on Kindle. Okay. It's the first vampire story in prose, anyway. I've done some vampire stuff in comics, but the first vampire story in prose that I've written. And it's on Kindle right now or at the Neotext website in about a little more than a year. It'll be available in print as part of a collection of horror novellas that's being put out. But for now, pretty much Kindle exclusive. And it's, you know, it's bloodthirsty, but also character driven, and has to do with a suicide hotline operator who is a vampire.
Okay.
So he's doing everything he can to help people. He wants to save their lives, you know, but sometimes it doesn't work out.
Yeah.
And then he goes to feed.
Oh, wow. Man.
That's very dark, but very awesome.
And then he starts to get calls from somebody who he thinks might be a vampire as well. So like, there's this dance.
Well, I'll read that tonight. I'll download that and read that tonight then.
Awesome.
Like I said, lots of stuff we talked about already. Anything else you want to plug before we wrap up here?
No, I mean, thanks for plugging the End Times, talking about that. And again, Bad Hand Books is where you can pre-order it. I really hope people get on the midnight train because I believe in these books.
I mean, the excitement just in the comments from hearing you talk about it for like 30 seconds is palpable. So I feel like it's going to pop off.
I'll be able to talk more about it in the near future, but for now I can just tease the shadows.
please come back.
Yeah, please come back at midnight. We'd love to talk more about it. Ben, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah,
an absolute pleasure. All right, there we go. Once again, that was Ben Percy. A couple of things to plug. You can pre-order the End Times Volume 1 from Bad Hand Books right now on their website. Also, there's a new issue of Punisher that's coming out tomorrow.
Oh,
Midnight is coming out. Oh, I really should have written this down, but I believe Fantastic Four is September. Maybe they're August, September, October are the three books. So let's say that is
The
fall. And Wade Wilson Deadpool is ongoing as well. So check all of that out.
Oh, yeah.
Lots to read.
Lots to read, as well as Hotline, which I'm going to read, as I promised, later tonight. And now we're going to read the next thing we read on the show, which is your audience questions.
Hey!
And for audience questions, all you got to do is drop a question in the comments and we'll get to it. It could be about absolutely anything. And while we're waiting for questions to come in, what are you guys drinking tonight? Justin, you making one of those End Times cocktails?
Actually, Pete, could I grab one from you?
Oh, man. I was going to grab that. Oh, wow.
You got so close. Godzilla PBR.
Oh, if you drink what Pete's drinking, you're drinking something.
What does it taste like? Godzilla piss or what's going on here?
Oh, come on, man.
Yeah, just sort of like a nuclear sweat.
Ooh, delicious. Oh, yeah.
Great. Pete, what about you?
A little Lagunitas daytime, you know what I mean?
Yeah. All right, there we go.
It's nighttime, Pete.
Yes. No, it's daytime somewhere. You know what I mean?
Ooh, I did miss a question. I thought this was for us, so I want to just read it and apologize. This is from Gary Robb. After Shadow of Maul and the Andor one-shot, any plans for more Star Wars content? I will just give a plug. There was a great Andor one-shot that Ben Percy put out. And there you go. Here, we got a question here from Stray Bullet. What are you going to have time to read it, Alex? You podcast all night and you know it. Yes,
that's true.
That is true. We do several secret podcasts after this podcast, not a joke. And then I edit those podcasts. So I'm usually up pretty late, but I don't know. I don't know about you guys, but I'm usually like pretty jazzed after the podcast. Like I edit the stuff and then I can't go to sleep for a while anyway.
Yeah. You're all hyped up.
Yeah,
hyped up on comic juice.
Exactly. I definitely, after the show, go walk around, go do some stuff. It's an energizing thing. It's not a complete go to bed situation.
Yeah.
Yeah, samesies.
Yeah, sorry. I was answering a question there. Gary Rahm says, Alex, you need to answer my question. The Ben Percy baritone. He's still odd and he's cooking dinner, so I feel a little embarrassed doing it, but it all about
that. That was horrible.
It was very bad. It was bad. His Tom report was much better than my Ben Percy.
Yeah.
Schreckler says, what are your favorite newspaper features besides comics? Oh, I do love an op-ed. What about you guys?
Give me some of that penny saver. I want to see I want to see people swapping goods.
Yeah.
That's what I was when Ben was talking about like being in a small town. That's what it was growing up in a small town as well. Like there's a whole back section of the paper where people are like, "Hey, I need a bowling pin." You're like, "I have one."
Pete, what about you? Favorite newspaper feature?
Oh, man. I mean, when I was a kid, it was always I couldn't wait for the comic section, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it was usually on the back of the sports, so I had to wait for my dad to finish reading the sports section. And it was like, come on!
And then eventually when you had to fight him for it, and that's when you became a man.
That's right, yeah.
The rite of passage in the LePage.
Yeah, what's weird is my brother won't fight his kids. I was like, you're not doing a good job raising them.
No, the kids have to fight the dad, I think. When a dad fights a kid.
That's a different thing. That's a different thing entirely. Greater Good says, what's our sneak peek for Pete's take on the new Punisher one-shot show? So, Pete, I don't know if you got a chance to listen, but Justin and I did a thing about Punisher One Last Kill, but we promised people at the beginning that it was unfair to talk about this without you there, so that we would tape a separate episode where it was probably us teeing you up and then you talk for like an hour all by yourself.
Yeah.
Which is why we're asking for a Pete's peek of your
I'm very excited to hear what you think because, well, you can hear what our takes were, but that's what prompted the question I had about the sort of split version of the Punisher, because I think we get that in this special, and it really made me look at the Punisher in a new light.
Well, for me, I think the Marvel flip said it all. It was a real emotional roller coaster. Like, you were like, oh, hell yeah, I know what this is about. And then the floor drops out from under you. You know, and it gets kind of crazy real fast.
I don't know what that means. What are you talking about? What happened?
That was the smallest peak. That's not a peak.
That was like the Pete flip is what you gave us. You gave us the Pete flip of your opinion.
Why are you keeping your opinion to yourself? Did you not enjoy it,
Pete? Do you not like the Punisher anymore?
I love the Punisher. Are you kidding me? I think Jon Bernthal is amazing as the Punisher.
Cryptic answers from Pete.
Yeah, you got to wait for my hour take. I want to tee this up. I didn't know this whole thing got space for that.
To be fair, you've been screaming this hour-long take to your comic boxes behind you for the last week. And so excited to push you in front of a microphone.
Yeah, the Punisher shrine is taking a beating, over this. So, yeah.
Yeah, interesting. Oh, wow, shots fired. Like the Punisher, I bet he hadn't watched it. Have you watched it, Pete?
Oh my God! Yes, I have.
An absolute roast.
Wow!
Oh, I've watched it. These stray bullies have talked about it.
Okay, we got a question here. If you had to cast one of your co-hosts for voice work, who would you cast them for? You do voice work, so I'd do a commercial for you.
A commercial, good.
Yeah,
yes.
I want you to get work. You got to support your family.
I would love that. The voice work, the best work in the biz. Sit and talk in front of a microphone. It's like this, except you get checks in the mail.
Nice. I definitely have Zalbin read the kind of side effects. You know what I mean? That part where people zone out.
Oh, sure.
Of a medicine?
Yeah.
Side effects include dizziness, headache, stomach aches, nausea,
partial death,
throwing up, vomiting.
Really good. I'm trying to think, because let's go mainstream. Like, what are the cartoons? I mean, Pete. I don't want to say Foggy Nelson, but it feels like you would take that role very seriously.
Oh yeah, that would be a role of a lifetime for sure.
I feel like you would actually do well on like an Adult Swim show, Pete.
Oh, nice. Yeah, that would be the dream.
Yeah, some sort of, this is nothing against you, but like some sort of weird character who's just talks like a relatively normal guy. Like, it would just be your voice, but he's a blob of something.
Or the neighbor was Carl? Was that
Carl? Yes.
Carl, yeah.
That's a Pete character if I've ever seen one. That's who Pete is now in his town in Pennsylvania. We don't know because he's never invited us, but like whatever town it is, you are.
Slyvania.
Yeah. Nice.
You're always welcome.
Alex is frozen for a brief moment because we went for him.
Don't come after me, man. Don't come after me. All right. This is Easy Reader says, hey guys, I missed the show when Absolute Batman number 20 came out. Were your copies badly damaged? The copy I got was not as bad as I expected it to be. No, I heard about that happening, but my local store in Brooklyn, all the copies seem fine, so I'm not sure. I'm sorry to anybody who got a damaged copy because it sounds widespread, but I personally did not see an issue.
That seems crazy for one particular issue to be damaged.
I think it's just I have not looked into this, so I don't know, but my guess would be there were so many different covers for Absolute Batman 20 in particular, it probably shipped in its own boxes. And that's been shipping so many copies anyway, so that's probably why it was just that one. But real bummer, man. Zenman says, I've seen a few novelizations of Marvel stories or original novels based in the Marvel Comics universe. Have you guys read those or DC based? And if so, what are your faves?
Hmm.
I will say I have not read a lot of these, but I do like the creators that end up working on them. They're like people who are like just really meticulous comic book writers.
Mm-hmm.
Like
Peter David wrote Gage, a bunch, right?
Christos Gage does a lot of
Yeah, Christos Gage.
Great. Yeah, Peter David did a lot of them back in the day.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is a weird thing. I can't really get into
read. I can't really read. This is a weird thing.
And I've never mentioned that before.
We've just been gliding on the pictures. All this time we thought it was Pete. It was
right.
Actually
Adam. Like, for example, when I just read that question, that was actually me going mah, 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 with my mouth. And then there's the real Alex is behind me saying the words because I don't know what they are.
I'm like, and are the you, real Alex.
Are you a human puppet?
Yeah. I have a problem with, like, spin-off novels. I've never been able to read any of the Star Wars spin-off novels, the Star Trek spin-off novels, anything like that. Like, there's something about it that I can't quite get into them for whatever reason.
Because you feel like they're one step too far removed from the main, like,
I think that's probably what it is, which is kind of crazy because, like you said, there's a lot of really quality stuff going on there. And I used to read, like, movie novelizations all the time back when I was a kid, but now... Wow. I don't know. There's just so much to read that I'm like, I don't need to read that too.
Well, I used to do that.
That
was definitely true in the past. I think now, because of the preciousness of all IP, the novelizations are actually, I think there's some real energy there and they are pushing story forward as opposed to being like something someone is dashing off to just get on the stands as fast as possible.
Yeah. This is from Easy Reader. Have you watched a show called Aquabats? I just found out about it, and I think it's lots of campy fun.
Yeah, Aquabats is cool. Yeah,
very fun. That's
great. No further comments.
Well, I mean, I was going to say that's a bit of an older show, I think.
Yeah,
on Adult Swim, I think.
Yeah,
there you go.
From a while back,
I have not. Okay, Stray Bullet says, "Chef question for R&D purposes: what's your favorite burrito?"
Great, easy
question. Steak.
Chorizo all day.
Chorizo, but what else? Like, there's what
just
else do you
chorizo.
Like?
Chorizo. I like chorizo wrapped in chorizo.
Smart.
Just like a solid block.
Sorry, my wife came back and I'm reckless right now.
Ooh, hey. Congratulations.
Yes.
I do usually order a chorizo burrito if it's an option for sure.
Oh, Alex.
I do like a breakfast burrito. Big fan of that.
There's nothing like, yeah.
I do like the California burrito with the French fries. That's always a lot of fun.
That's a line for me.
You can't do that?
Thank you. I don't want French fries in there. Okay. I'll have them on the side. I'll control. French fries, everyone's like,
what if
like,
you're in
hey,
Chicago and they stuff it in the sandwich? Are you doing that?
Everyone's like, yeah, I'll put French fries in it. And it's like, it's our local cuisine. I'm like, that's not cuisine. That's like you made a mistake once and now it's
stop.
It's I'm just saying I don't want that.
You're
I want
too
the French
good for
fries
it?
Separate. They should be. It's not too good. It's not too good. A lot of people like it. I'm just saying I don't want that. I don't want it that way.
Oh, weird. It's a weird line, bro.
Well, that's the line
says,
we have.
Get
Alex
out of here with your French fry burrito.
Wait, I just saw.
I like to get a burrito that's just French fries. It's just the tortilla.
You're eating McDonald's medium fry, Alex, that you think is a burrito.
I don't want to go
cardboard
past,
on the outside.
I don't want to go past the fact that steak burritos are also really delicious.
Yeah, steak burritos are good, but that's basic.
Thank you.
You're basic.
Stanley wants to know expectations for the Boys finale. Now, I should mention, as we're taping this in like an hour and a half, it's going to start playing in movie theaters in 4DX. They sold out instantly. They added extra showings. I saw they're doing like
4DX would be a horrible idea for this.
100%
agree. You're going to get your ass kicked.
not just your ass
up.
That's
you're
like
going to get fucked.
You're
going
to get sprayed with something.
Smells. Yeah, like
smells.
The blood in your face.
The deep is going to be in there, so it's going to be a weird,
teeth?
Like watery
it's
gonna seaweed.
Spray teeth in you.
Oh man, yeah.
Oh, the deep.
Yeah,
oh,
okay. Yeah.
I thought you were talking about like, just load it up with teeth. We're going to load it up with teeth and shoot teeth at people. I don't know. It's the Boys. Anyway, so they're doing that and then it's going to premiere tomorrow on Prime Video. We're definitely going to be talking about it on our Boys podcast. Let's hear it for the Boys. But you boys, expectations. Pete, what about you? We didn't get to talk to you about the last episode, I don't think. So.
Yeah, it's crazy. I mean, I was texting Stray Bullies about it, but the, Homelander's go-to move is just, if he doesn't like somebody, he's just going to straight murder you. So it's like, man, this is just watching this happen one by one here. So, I hope the boys can pull this off, but we will see. We will see. Mother's Milk gave a great speech. I felt very hyped. I was like, oh, come on. I also loved the bit about, like, you know, if you're too stoned, the mind readers can't get you. You know, I mean, come on. That's
been
hilarious.
Been working on that for years.
It's hilarious.
No one's reading your mind, my guy.
Yeah, there's too many voices still go on here.
Gotta limit them. I'm very excited. I feel like this episode that just happened was a real, like, everything just got still at the end. And now it's time to spring the trap that's been waiting for so long. I was listening to an interview with Eric Kripke, and he was talking about they've had the last 10 minutes in place for years now.
Oh, wow.
They're locked in. He was talking really interesting the way they talked about – he was talking about how writing this last season, they had their, like, cards on the wall of all the characters and the sort of their journeys throughout the season. So very plain.
And their horrible deaths.
Yes, maybe, question mark. But they also had, like, a bucket of, like, okay, find me every loose thread in the series. And so they had just this grab bag of, like, okay, let's pull Legend. Let's pull whatever character and be like, oh, maybe we can resolve this. Maybe we can resolve this, pay off this long-running joke. And that's really exciting. But based on our comic knowledge and what I heard in this interview, I do think we're going to get a Bad Butcher situation at the very end. But the prime focus in this episode is about the fall
Samuel L. Jackson.
The fall of Homelander, which is a long time coming. Cannot wait to see it.
You think he's just going to laser eyes everybody?
Yes, Alex?
Just going to laser
eyes
everybody?
Yes, little smiles? Miles of smiles over there?
I think I can say that I've seen it. I'm not going to spoil anything, Pete.
You're beaming. Let me just read you, Alex. Let me just use my – I know you're not high, so let me read your mind. You're excited. And the urgency – little behind the scenes here. The urgency with which you said, hey, guys, we have to review this ASAP. Get booked us in for it. I think you liked it, and I think you're excited about it. Ooh.
Pete, do you want any general impressions, or you want
nothing? I will murder you somehow.
Take off your headphones for 1 second. I'll say, like, one sentence here. Just
he's just protecting you, Pete. He's not going to.
Yeah, I think they landed the plane. There's going to be quibbles and there's going to be qualms, and people will be upset about things here and there. And certainly, I have questions, but, like, I found it very satisfying.
I'll say. Like, no joke, when you were like, hey, guys, okay, so it's going to premiere here. We're going to watch it in the morning, and we're going to talk about it. And I was like, you bastard, it was great. I knew as soon as you did it, it was great.
Pete, you can put your headphones back on.
I'm so, so excited to watch it. I've been hyped this entire season for this finale, and I can't wait to watch it.
And we've been kind of like, we were talking about this on the last episode of Let's Hear It for the Boys, that, like, it's been really negative, the blowback about it, which I've been
a lot of people
very
are down
surprised.
On it.
Yeah.
And, like, people are like, oh, you know, I just don't know. And I, like, yes, there's a little bit of, like, we're seeing similar beats, but I think that's a little bit the point. And the satire is so on point. And as I've said since the beginning of the season, especially, and even before, like, this is a playbook about pushing back against autocracy and fascism. And they are doing that so well and disguising it so perfectly in the guise of an badass, ultra-violent superhero show.
Yeah. I'm worried about what's going to happen to the Deep. I mean, your boy Justin looked in bad shape. I couldn't believe he didn't save that dude. The lean sideways, or whatever you said, swim sideways, was a hilarious thing to shout. I would laugh my ass off, and Samuel L. Jackson stole the show, but I'm like, yo, oh, man.
All right. Well,
very
we'll...
fun. The Deep, my prediction, the Deep is the next Homelander.
We'll see.
You've been calling that for a while.
You have? We will find out tomorrow when it premieres. We'll have our podcast up as quickly as possible, recapping the finale. And, folks, that is it for your audience questions. Next up, we're going to turn to trivia. Yes.
That's Pete. Right.
And for that, we're going to go over to Pete LePage.
All right. This is the part we give back to you, the lovely audience. Thank you so much for listening. We appreciate it. It's an opportunity to win $25 free from Midtown Comics Online. Because if you had $25, why not go to a comic book shop? Support a local comic book shop. That sounds like
That's
fun.
That's nice.
Well, yeah. We did have Zen Man and Digital DQ kind of did it at the same time. Do you have a preference, Pete?
Which one? Man. I mean, well, you got to kind of go in order there. It looks like Zen Man did beat them.
All right, Zen Man, it is you, Digital DAC. Sorry about that. Hit us up next week. And you
come back next time. We'll definitely call you.
Yes, we'll remember. We're good at that. And Pete, take it away. You ready?
Yeah, sure. Today's trivia is about the comic book character Lobo and a small nod to the legend Sam Keith. RIP, thanks for all the great writing and art. Mm. Yeah. All right, here we go. Question number one. In what comic book did Lobo first appear? Is it A, Omega Men number 3, June 1983? B, Too Bad Your Name's Not Banjo, or Grover the Great Amazo? Fucking Greg, that is a fucking cool ass van though. Or C, Greg Vanzo.
Wow.
What?
Were you storing that up? Did that take the entire couple of weeks while you were gone to?
That's right. I've been working on that tirelessly.
That's great. It's really, it's crushing.
It's called writing, Alec.
Get with it. I'm going with A, he says.
Yes, that is correct. Well
great
done.
Stuff, right. Zen Man.
Yeah. Question number two. Which team has Lobo once been a member of? Is it A, the Church of Triple Fish God? B, so Amy, what you're saying is Dan is missing? C, Amy Danless.
All right, that was less of a walk, I want to say. A again, is it A?
Yes, it is. It is.
Really good stuff.
Yeah, here we
Danless.
Go.
Danless.
Here we go, last one. The current run isn't the only time we've seen a young, adorable Lobo. What year was Little Lobo? Is it A, in the year 2000? B, whatever Beavis? C, Mike Judge?
Nice.
Great. Did you say A again?
It is A again.
All right. Oh, and going with A again. I actually did the last one. There you go.
Nice.
Wow, that's what a coincidence. Congratulations. You are going to get a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. Shoot us an email and we will get that off to you. Pete, what is the secret movie you were referencing?
Well, I was talking about the 1995 award-winning cult classic TV miniseries, The Max.
Of course. Ah, yes,
that
absolutely.
Really tracks.
Yeah.
That really tracks.
Now, you got to make tracks over to your comic book shop to pick up new comics this week. What are you guys looking forward to, Pete?
Well, I'll tell you what. I'm looking forward to Wonder Woman number 33, as well as Absolute Green Arrow number 1. And in case you're wondering why Absolute Green Arrow, it's because you had me at Kirky.
Raphael Albuquerque.
Yeah, okay. That's right.
And I'll mention, we talked to Pornsack, Petrichot, and Raphael Albuquerque about the title. That is up in the comments.
Wait, you talked to the Kirky?
We did.
Yeah, we did. Pete, it's actually a great interview, and we've read the issue ahead of time, and man, am I excited for everyone to read this issue. I
Me
super
too.
Enjoyed it.
Justin, what else are you excited for?
A lot of stuff coming down the pipeline. Going to have to give the almost standard shout-out to Amazing Spider-Man number 29. We're kicking into some new territory here. I just feel like every new arc that Joe Kelly's doing is fun and exciting and pushing Spider-Man into new and different directions. Also looking forward to... we got Odin number 1 from James Tynan and Marguerite Bennett. Very curious what this is. James Tynan keeps...
JT4.
He's busy out there, but he's partnering with really interesting people to make his comics and collaborating with them. And so very excited for that as well.
Last week on the show, we had Chris Condon here, and he talked about all the stuff that he is doing. And he's got two titles tomorrow that I'm both really interested to check out. Ultimate Impact Reborn from Marvel, which is following up on Ultimate Spider-Man Incursion. And also Of the Earth, which sounded really fascinating from hearing him talking about it as a eco-horror comic book. Yes, Pete, what is your question?
Oh, I was going to wait for you to finish your sentence before I interrupt.
It doesn't matter.
Oh, what's up? Well, it's just that all these comics sound great. Is there any way that all these comics are on the stack that's going to be out tomorrow?
That's a great question, Pete. They are all going to be in the Stack podcast that comes out tomorrow, Wednesday, 9 a.m., both the Comic Book Club feed and the dedicated Stack feed. And folks, that is it for this week's show. Thank you so much to Ben Percy for coming on to talk about The End Times, which is coming out in 2027. Also, Punisher, Wade Wilson, Deadpool, I forgot for a second, Midnight Fantastic Four coming out in the fall, and a bunch of other stuff. Always check out all of his stuff. Next week on the show, Kenny Porter and Tyrell Cannon are going to be here to talk about the new IDW title, Operation Iron Coffin, about a vampire killing a bunch of Nazis on a train.
That sounds
should
fun.
Be a fun time.
Yeah.
Should be good. Comic Book Club News, our daily news podcast, Monday through Friday, every day of the week. Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast. We did just talk about The Punisher, and we'll probably talk about it again. Let's Hear It for the Boys, our boys podcast, wrapping things up tomorrow for good, question mark. Patreon.com/comicbookclub. Support this show and all the shows we do. Comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, we'll see you at the Comic Book Club.
Take care of yourself out there. They sit on crappy couches and they let the secrets leak. And occasionally they let that special guest speak. So grab your inhaler.
Thanks, everybody. Have a great night.
Yeah.
Good night.